The following shiur has been presented by Rav Yehoshua Grunwald, Dayan at the Beis Havad of Lakewood, New Jersey, and has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To dedicate a daf, a perik, or an entire masechta, please call 1-888-485-8223 or email info@thehalachacenter.org.
The Gemara here discusses on the Amid Beis different cases of somebody that while he's separating Maisa Behema, if there was mix-ups, such as two animals went out at the same time, and he called them Tishi, or he called them Asiri, or he called them Achad Asar, and the Gemara discusses all these different cases, what the halach is. And the Gemara says, Amar Rav, Rav says, Yotu Shnayim B'Tishi. If two animals, if there's somebody counting Maisa Behemah, the way they would take off Maisa Behemah, they would have the animals that were born and were Chayi V'Maisa, would go out singly through an open gate, and they would go out one at a time, and the tenth one, they'd count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, they would hit with a stick and they would call it Meiser. They would have some paint, they would paint it like this. They would know that it was the 10th one and it was Meiser and it had the Kedusha of Meiser on it. That's how they would tithe the animals and take off, separate Meiser Behem. Now what happens if by mistake, if two animals squeeze through that opening and then he has a problem that it is a mix-up, which one is going to be mice and which one not. Now there's numerous ways how there could be such a mix-up. So Rabbi says, Yotu Shnayim B'Tishi, if when it came number 9, two of them after the first 8 went out, and number 9 is supposed to go out, at that time when number 9 is supposed to go out, two of them squeezed out together. If you call on Tishi, if you call them both 9, so then, whichever one in truth is really the 10th one, that one is a Meiser one, even though he didn't call a Meiser. And the other one that he called number 9, the one that in truth is really number 9, is Chulin. So Rav says, so in this case, we're left with having number 9 and number 10 mixed together, in other words, a chulin and a miser animal mixed together. Continues Rava. Asiri me'ilav kodesh. And the reason being, the number 10 is kodesh on its own. Chi kokari le. And the number 9, he called the number 9, and therefore it's considered chulin. Karan asiri, what happens if the two went out by number 9 and he called them both number 10? So then, asiri vichi miravim zabazet. And then we have a scenario, then it's considered that number 10 and number 9 are mixed together. So again, it's going to be the same thing. You're going to have chulin and maisa mixed together. Yotu shnayim ba'asiri. What happens if 9 already went out single file? When after the 9 finished, 2 went out as number 10. If you call them both number 10, then asiri ba'achados miravim zabazet. Then the halacha is that number 10 and number 11 are mixed with each other, and they're both kaddish, because the halacha is that what happens if somebody had 10 go out and he was mafresh maisa, then when number 11 went out, he also called a maisa. So the halacha is, if he calls number 11 maisa, that number 11 is kaddish, has a kedusha of a carbon, it becomes kaddish, and he has to bring it as a carbon shlamim. Since he called it Meiser, Meiser is something that's very close to being a Shlomim. So you can't have Meiser when it's not number 10. It's impossible to take off number 11 as being Meiser. But if he calls it Meiser, then he's making it the Kedusha that's similar to Meiser, which is the kedusha of shlamim. So it's a very similar thing if two of them go out as number 10, and he calls them both number 10, so whichever one in truth is number 10, that's the regular ma'aser. Whichever one in truth is number 11, then that's a kaddish b'kedusha shlamim, that's similar to somebody that had number 11 that went out, and he called number 11 number 10, which we said, number 11 that's called 10 gets a kedusha of a shlamim, gets some kedusha that's similar to ma'aser, and it has to be brought as a shlamim. Karan Achad Asar, if two of them went out as number 10 and he called them both 11, then Asiri V'chulim Uram Zebazeh, then it's going to come out that we have an animal that's a Ma'isa and an animal of Chulin that are mixed with each other. Because number 11 that's called number 11 is not Kaddish, number 10 which was called 11 is Kaddish, so we have a Ma'isa animal with a Chulin animal that are mixed with each other. Now what happens, and this from here on in the Shia I'm going to talk about this specific case. Out of all these four cases that we talked about, I'm going to narrow down the Shia from here on about the case of somebody they called when two of them went out as number 10, and he called them both number 10. So there the halacha is that there's Ma'aser and Shlamim that are mixed with each other. So it's a Ma'aser carbon and a Shlamim carbon that are mixed with each other. What's the halacha when a Ma'aser carbon and a Shlamim carbon are mixed with each other? So the Gemara later on at the end of the Amud says that there's a three-way Machlekes Tanoim. What the halacha is, what we do with these animals that are mixed as a Ma'aser and a Shlamim that are mixed together. One b'raisa says that when it's a ma'aser and a shlamim mixed together, we wait, we let them pasture, let them get a mum, and then they're both, they're both like a kachim that became pasul, and we eat them with their mum. Another b'raisa says that if the shlamim and a ma'aser get mixed together, we bring both of them. We bring both of them as a carbon. The carbon of ma'is and the carbon of shlamim are very similar. There aren't that many differences. So we're able to satisfy both obligations of carbon by bringing them as a carbon. Then there's a third b'raisa that says that they both have to die, which the Gemara goes on to explain. Is that a different town? Is it not a different town? Is it Bizman Azeh? That's really tomorrow's daf. That's daf Samach Aleph to discuss the man, the Omer, that says, the B'raisa that says that they both die. The Rambam actually paskins like the man, the Omer, that says that they pasture and we wait until they get a mum and then they're eaten with their mum. However, there is another man, the Omer, that says that we are able to bring them both as a carbon. So there's a Rashi, Mesach Erevin Daf Nun Amar Aleph, that explains quite clearly what the halacha is when they both are brought as a carbon, and one of them is a ma'is and one of them is a shlam. So Rashi says, what's the difference between a ma'is and a shlam? Says Rashi, a carbon shlamim, you have to do smicha on it. You have to bring the sochim together with it. You have to give the chaz and shoik to a kohen. Different parts of the animal you have to give to the kohen, and you also have to wave them. Then also, that's when you bring the shlamim. These are halachas that a shlamim have that a carbon ma'aser doesn't have. So extra halachas that a shlamim have, that ma'aser doesn't have, is that a shlamim needs a smicha, it needs nesachim, it needs that the chaz and shaykh are given to the kohen, and that they should be waived. There are other halachas that apply to a shlamim and not to ma'aser, but those apply, one is that it could be redeemed with a mum, and the other one is that tmuras and kreva, that the tmura is brought, the tamur is not brought. Now those nafkaminis do not apply to animals that are being brought as the carbon. the nafkaminas that apply to the animal that's brought as a korban were the ones that we mentioned of smicha, nesachim, and chazav eshoik, and the tnufa and the chazav eshoik. So Rashi says that when, according to this Tana, that both animals are brought, this mixture of animals, that one is a ma'aser korban and one is a shlamim korban, and we bring both, and we just have to satisfy the halachis that apply to the ma'aser korban and the shlamim korban. So that would mean that we'll bring these animals as a shlamim, we'll do smicha on them, since possibly they're shlamims, each one is possibly a shlamim. We'll do bring nesachim, one nesachim for whichever one is a shlamim. And then we'll give the chaz v'sheik of both of them to the kayin, and we'll do chatnufa and the chaz v'sheik of both of them, because we have to satisfy both of them as if they are perhaps a shlamim. Then Rashi says his own halacha. Libi oimer, says Rashi, I think the einei mevorach al hatnufa v'al hasmicha, to lo yehavi v'rocha l'vatola. Rashi says, I think that the halach is going to be that usually when we bring karbonis, so that they're going to make a bracha when they do smicha. There's a mitzvah to do smicha on the animal that's brought. So they'll say a birkas ha-mitzvah. It's just like we say a bracha before we blow shofar, before we lay megillah, before we put on tefillin, before we put on tzitzis, etc. Before all bracha, all mitzvahs, we make a bracha, birkas ha-mitzvahs. So too, before they would do smicha, which is a mitzvah of the carbon, they would make a birkas ha-mitzvahs. Says Rashi here that somebody has a mixture. And so too, when before they would do tenufa is another mitzvah of the carbon, they would make a bracha on the tenufa. Says Rashi, La'anius Daiti, when they would do tnufa or smicha, and these animals that are a mixture of a maaser and a shlamim, then they would not make a bracha on the smicha, and they would not make a bracha on the tnufa, since it's a sofik. Since we don't know which one is a maaser, which one is a shlamim, see, each smicha that we do and each tnufa that we do is really a sofik, is a questionable whether it's a mitzvah to do that smicha or not, so therefore we don't make a bracha. So the question is, why is it that you can't make a bracha on that tnufa, or that you can't make a bracha on that smicha? Let's bring one animal right after the next. And the owner will do a smicha on one animal following the next. And if he does that, l'chayra, there's no problem of hafzik. Let him make one birchas hamitzvah. Let him make one bracha, and then immediately do two smichas. Smicha on one animal, and smicha on the other animal. In other words, smicha on both animals from this mixture. And with that, he for sure, mimonafshach, either way, whichever one, he doesn't know which one was really a ma'aseh, which one was really a shlamim, which one really had the obligation of smicha, which one didn't. But either way, he for sure did, and one of them, the mitzvah of smicha. And if he'll do that, then he can make a bracha. Why can't he make a bracha? So why is Rashi saying that he can't make a bracha? Let him just bring one after the next, and then he can make a bracha. That's the question that Achrayim have. And Achrayim say an answer. That l'chayra, Rashi safik, what Rashi means to say is that he can't make a bracha, even if he'll do it in that oifen, even if he'll do it in that form, and that is because you can't be mafsik between the bracha and the mitzvah. You can't make an interruption between the bracha and doing the mitzvah. And doing an action between the bracha and the mitzvah is considered an interruption. Doing a smicha, performing a smicha on an animal that, on the possibility that this smicha is not really an obligation of smicha, so that's an action that's not a mitzvah. Performing an action of not the mitzvah in between the bracha and the real mitzvah is considered a hefsek. So therefore, it's impossible to make a bracha. We will not allow him to make a bracha, says Rashi, because possibly he is making a hefsek of an action between the bracha and the mitzvah that he's performing. That is l'chayra what Rashi means, according to the ways numerous achrayim explain Rashi. Now Rashi says, Libi Oimer, he's saying l'chayra, this is what I believe. Rashi says he doesn't have a proof to it. Perhaps Rashi is even mesopic if we say that performing an action in between constitutes a hafsik. But at least Rashi has such a possibility, and Rashi seems to be suspicious, quite suspicious, and he tells us that l'chayra he would not make a bracha. Rashi doesn't say these type of things so often. Bichlal, Rashi doesn't add in things that are just libi oimer or niyar l'niyaz daiti. Usually Rashi does says things conclusively. This is so. He doesn't say that it's I think like this. He just says it. And usually also Rashi doesn't add in like extra shtik v'chtoyer, like extra things. But here, this is what Rashi says. Al-Kapanim, this is what Rashi says. Libi oimer, I think that they would not make a bracha. And the way Acharonim explain is that even if you will do one after the next, it's because the action will constitute a hefsek. Now this, Rashi, is l'chayra, a very important halacha. And I would like to extend this to a very interesting application, which to best explain it, to best go through it, I would tell you a story, a very interesting story. There's a Sefer Zichron in Yitzchak that brings down a letter from Rabbi Yehuda Leib Don Yechia, who was a student of Reb Chaim Brisker, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. And he says that he had a story with Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, which is actually a quite famous story of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. He says that it was one year he was by his Rebbe Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, and there were different asroigim, and there were very beautiful asroigim, and he told his Rebbe Reb Chaim Soloveitchik that these asroigim are very nice, but they're not Yanave Asroigim. They don't come from this city in Italy that's called Yanave. It's a certain city where Asroigim grow. And even though these Asroigim look beautiful, but they may perhaps be more kavim. They may be perhaps coming from trees that were grafted with other fruits other than an Asroig. And if that's the case, they're not kosher to be used for the shaking lulav and esrig. And therefore, as beautiful as they are, they're not really the best to be used for a mitzvah. So told the Talmud of Chaim Soloveitchik to Chaim Soloveitchik. And he said, but the Chassam Sofer says that if you take a Yanav esrig, the Chassam Sofer writes that the Yanav esrogim are the cheskes bulti merkavim. You don't have to worry about these asroigim that come from this Yanava place, and then you can be sure and certain that they're not merkavim, that they're not grafted, and they're for sure kosher. So he showed Reb Chaim the words of the Chassam Sofer, and when Reb Chaim saw that, he was very impressed, and the next year he worked on getting an esrig from this place in Italy. Now, it should be noted, as a side note, that today, despite that the Chassam Sofer wrote that in his days, the Yanav Esrogim were Becheskes Bolti Merkavim, perhaps the Metzias may have changed, and things may have been changed since when the Chassam Sofer wrote his Tshuva, even though historically, in the time of the Chassam Sofer, those Esrogim were considered that they were for sure, it could be assumed that they for sure were not grafted. The Metzias may have changed. The facts may have changed, and today there are questions that perhaps they're not as the Cheskes Bilti Merkavim. They may not be so Vadai Kasha like they were in the days of the Chassam Sofer and the days of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. Be that as it may, the next year Reb Chaim Soloveitchik worked on getting an esrig from that place called Yanava. And he wound up getting an esrig, one from Yanava and one from not Yanava. The one he had that was not from Yanava was a beautiful esrig. It had hidurim, had extra ways that it was beautiful and perhaps more lechatchila. And then he had his Yanava esrig, which he considered as being a vaday kosher, However, the Yain of Essek wasn't so beautiful. It wasn't so nice. Didn't compare to the beauty of the Esrig that was not from Yanev. So Reb Chaim Soloveitchik wanted to make a bracha on both. He wanted to have that he'll for sure fulfill his mitzvah of Esrig. So he wanted to shake that Esrig came from Yanev. On the other hand, he wanted to shake the Esrig that was beautiful because on the chance that that Esrig is an Esrig, it would be more mahodi, it would be a better mitzvah if it's a beautiful Esrig. So he wanted to shake both. And his question was, which one should he shake first? Should he shake the one that's from Yanavet first, or should he shake the one that was beautiful first? So he said, he decided, Chaim said that for sure he has to shake the one that comes not from Yanavet first, and then afterwards shake the one that comes from Yanavet. Why? Said Chaim, once a person fulfills the mitzvah, they fulfill the mitzvah. You can't make the mitzvah better once you did it. So, the only way he'll have that maila, he'll have that advantage of shaking a beautiful esrig that will be esrig mehudar, is only if he'll shake that esrig first. Then afterwards, to make sure for certain that he was fulfilled the mitzvah, he'll shake the yanav esrig that's not as beautiful, and he'll fulfill the mitzvah on the chance that he hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah yet. And so did Reb Chaim. And so writes the Talmud of Reb Chaim, that apparently he saw this story in front of him, and this is what Reb Chaim did, and he wrote this down, and it's printed in a sefer, and it's quite famous, this story of Reb Chaim, and this psak, and this concept of Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim showed us a very important way of thinking. That when we come to a mitzvah, once the mitzvah is fulfilled, it's fulfilled, and a person can't fill in a hiddur later on. If a person wants to get the hiddur, they better get the hiddur the first time around, because once they lose it, they lost it. There's no way to get it back. It doesn't help to do the mitzvah again in a mehudadik way once somebody fulfilled the mitzvah. So there's another sefer, though, that brings down that Reb Lezer Silver had a question on this psak of Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim went ahead. L'choyer, Reb Chaim made a bracha. Reb Chaim wouldn't shake lulav and esrog without making a bracha just because he wanted to have a mehudah dike mitzvah. So Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, he first shook a lulav and esrog and he made a bracha on the mehudah dike one which wasn't for sure kosher, and then he shook the one that was for sure kosher. So Reb Lezer Silver asked, how could Reb Chaim do such a thing? And he disagreed because of this question on Reb Chaim. So how could Reb Chaim do such a thing? Rashi said that we just mentioned. Rashi said in Masechta Erevin that an action is considered a hefsek between the bracha and the mitzvah. So how could Reb Chaim shake an esrig that's possibly not the right esrig? First, he's going to perhaps be doing a hefsek between his bracha and the real mitzvah. And therefore, says the Blazer Silver, the right way to do it is to shake the Yanav Esrik first, and there's no way to be yoytzer the hiddur. There's no way out. The only way to get the bracha and not make a hefsek and then get a vaday mitzvah is only by shaking the one that's a vaday mitzvah right away, immediately. And the only way to do it is to make a bracha, shake the Yanav Esrik, and that's it. And the Blazer Silver says he told this over to the Rogachover Goyin. And the Rogachover Goyin agreed to him. And the Chayra, his logic fits in very, it seems to be very accurate. Because we have this Rashi Masechta Erevin that says that action constitutes a hefsek between the bracha and the mitzvah. So there's another sefer, there's a sefer Mikroi Kodesh, Sukkis Chelik Beis, Simitas. So this sefer says that they asked the Brisker Rav this question. The Brisker Rav was the son of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. And they asked the Brisker Rav this question that blazes over overhead. How could Reb Chaim shake an esrig that's not for sure a good esrig between the bracha and the one that's a vada yesrig, l'choyer it's going to be a hefsik between the bracha and the mitzvah. So the Brisker Rav answered that it's not shver. What his father did, there's no problem with it. Said the Brisker Rav, I'll explain to you why his father did what he did. He said, you're right. That it, Rashi says that doing an action is a hefsik between the bracha and the mitzvah. It's correct. And theoretically, shaking an esrig between the bracha and the mitzvah is a problem if it's not a fulfillment of the mitzvah. However, if you look carefully in the halachas of lulav and esrig, you'll see that the bracha be'etzem, a person can make a bracha on the lulav. When does Rashi say, let's go back a step, when does Rashi say it's a problem? Rashi only says it's a problem between making the bracha and doing the mitzvah. What about if it's in the middle of a mitzvah? Once a person started the mitzvah, and a person didn't yet finish the mitzvah, would action be a hefsik then in the middle of the mitzvah, in the middle of the performance of the mitzvah? That Rashi didn't talk about. Said the Brisker Rav, it's not a problem. Since the mitzvah of Arba Minim consists of shaking four different species, and the bracha is al netilas lulav, the bracha can be chal even once a person shakes the lulav. See, even though he made an interruption, perhaps, al atzara sofik, between the bracha and shaking the esrig, since there was no interruption between making the bracha and shaking the lulav he knew was for sure kosher. So the bracha was already chal. There was no interruption between the bracha and the lulav. Even if there was perhaps interruption between the bracha and the esrig, the bracha already was chal, and there was no problem of doing an action and making a hefsek between the esrig. And we find that Rishonim say that a person can make a bracha on the lulav without making a bracha on the esrig, and therefore, said the Brisker Rav, it's not a problem. So in other words, the Brisker Rav agreed that the, seemingly, agreed to the Blazer Sofer's problem. Like it's a Rashi, that we can't make a hefsek between the bracha, an action, we can't do an action between the bracha and the mitzvah. And in a chanami, if it would be a different mitzvah, so such, for example, let's say it would be shofar. Somebody would have two shofars. One shofar is vadei kosher, but it's not mehoder. And the other shofar is more mehoder, but it's not vadei kosher. So then, a person would have to blow from the shofar that's for sure kosher first, even though it's not mehoder. Because if they're going to blow from the wrong shofar, it's going to come out they're doing an action in between the bracha and the mitzvah. The Reb Chaim would agree fully to Blazer Sofer, said the Brisker Rav. Nor was, Reb Chaim only did it this way because by lulav, the bracha is able to be chal and the lulav, and then it's only a hafsik in the middle of the mitzvah, and not a hafsik between the bracha and the mitzvah. So what's the explanation? Why is it? What's the difference between a hefsek between the beginning, between the bracha and the mitzvah, and a hefsek in the middle of the mitzvah? So the truth is, there's a this concept that the Brisker Rav said to make such a differentiation. There's really an earlier sefer, the Shvilei David, that speaks this out. There's a sefer Shvilei David. He wrote Chidushim, an Arba Chalkei Shulchan Aruch. And in his volume in Erechaim, in the beginning of his volume in Erechaim, he has klolim of different topics. He has klolim about Hilchas Brachas. So for there in Hilchas Brachas, he says this concept. So first he talks about an action being a hefsik between a bracha and a mitzvah, and he says it's a sofik, which l'chayra he means because Rashi has a sofik. He's masopik if an action is a hefsik. L'chayra he means because Rashi has a sofik. He doesn't say why he has a sofik, but l'chayra that should be the sofik. And then he says, but even though it's a sofik of a hefsik, doing an action between a bracha and a mitzvah, but once somebody's in the middle of a mitzvah, then an action is not a hefsik. In the middle of a mitzvah, even though a person can't make a a big hafzik, but the hafzik of an action is not a problem when it's in the middle of a mitzvah. And that's exactly the way the mamish, the halacha, that the Brisker Rav said. I don't think either of the two knew about the other one saying it, but they both end up saying the same thing. And the Shvili David explains, why is it? Why is it that there's a difference between making a hafzik between the bracha and the mitzvah, and a hafzik in the middle of the mitzvah? He says, because if you're making a bracha and then doing a mitzvah, the bracha and the mitzvah do not really inherently connect one to the other. A bracha is a thing on its own, and a mitzvah is something on its own. The bracha is something the Chachamim instituted, Chazal instituted, rabbinically instituted, and the mitzvah is something that's a biblical obligation. They're two separate things. What connects them? If you're going to make a hafzik, that's going to disconnect them. If they're done one right after the other simultaneously, they'll become connected. The bracha and the mitzvah will become connected if you don't make interruption. But any interruption, even small interruption, can interrupt and be mafzik between the two. However, two halves, two parts of a mitzvah, are inherently connected. Unless you make a terrible hafzik, a very big hafzik, they will remain connected. And that's why there's a difference, says the Shvilei David, between a hafzik that's between the bracha and the mitzvah, and a hafzik that's in the middle of the mitzvah. And so, in this year, we got to see how Rashi told us that performing an action could constitute a hafzik. That's one. And two, we got to see the concept of Reb Chaim. How Reb Chaim says that when somebody has a vaday mitzvah that's not mehoder, and a mitzvah that's mehoder and not vaday, then Reb Chaim said a person should first do the one that's mehoder. And we said that there's a big question on that, because then there's a hafzik between the bracha and the mitzvah. And we said, the Brisker Rav said that Reb Chaim only said his mehalich when it's the lulav and esrig, that the bracha was already chal on the lulav. And then we also said there's a difference whether an action is a hafzik between the bracha and the mitzvah, or whether an action is a hafzik in the middle of a mitzvah. Now, what's going to happen if somebody's in the middle of saying Kriyashma, Birchus Kriyashma? Sometimes this comes up. Person wants to know they're holding in the middle of Birchus Kriyashma, and they have something important to tell their friends, so they can't talk. So instead of talking, they want to write it down. So is somebody allowed to write it down? Can they write down this message they want to tell their friend? So the first question that's involved in such a thing is the fact that perhaps ksiva kedibur, perhaps writing it down is like talking. You're trying to avoid talking in the middle of the bracha, and instead you're writing it down, and writing is considered talking, so you didn't gain anything. So the truth is that it's a whole tumul in achrayim. If ksiva, if writing is considered kedibur, is like talking. However, as far as that issue, there's a way to get out of it. If a person, achrayim say, that if a person has, if a person consciously thinks that their writing should not constitute like talking, then the writing is for sure not counted like talking. So as far as that problem, a person could just consciously think that their writing should not constitute like talking, and with that it would not be considered kedibur, and they wouldn't have that issue. However, there's a second issue, and that is the issue that we were discussing here. That even though it's not considered like talking, but we have this concept that Rashi told us, that doing an action is considered a hafzik. So l'chayra, a person could say, that a person, it would be prohibited to write down a message in the middle of Birchas Kriyashma, because it's a hafzik. Just like between doing the brach, making the brach and doing the mitzvah, you can't do an action. So to the middle of Birchas Kriyashma, you can't do an action of writing. However, we saw that the Shvilei David said, and the Brisker Rav said, that when you're in the middle of a mitzvah, then action is not a problem. So the Chuvus B'Tzeil HaChochma says that at least B'Shas HaTzayrich, a person could do that, that here if someone's in the middle of Birchas Kriyas Shema, they're in the middle of a mitzvah, so their hefsek is less of a problem. So then we say that an action is not a problem. And therefore, if a person who has a tzayrich gadol, they're going to be able to write down a message in the middle of Birchas Kriyas Shema, as long as they have in mind that their writing should not be considered like talking. This concludes this year.
The Daf Yomi Halacha series has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To reach the center for halacha consultation, service, educational seminars, or media, please call 1-888-485-VAAD. That's 1-888-485-8223. To sign up to the BHHJ, the Beis Havad's weekly interactive e-journal, please visit www.bhhj.org, or you can email us at office@thehalachacenter.org.